This is Payments Ground Game, where we go under the operational hood of payments ISOs. Let's take a deep dive into the tactics you can use to strategically scale performance and your bottom line.
Hey, welcome everybody to another insightful edition of Payments Ground Game. Today, we have with us an individual that, you know, I kind of look at as the Canadian version of us. We met Ryan and Kristen about 2 years ago, and very fortunate to do so. It's been very insightful for us, and they own a ISO in Nova Scotia, Canada, a little bit different than the U.S., and I think that's some of the things we're going to talk about today. But their ISO is called Sona. And they mostly, like I said, are in the Nova Scotia area. And with us today, as I said, is Ryan O'Leary. And I'm excited to have you here with us today, Ryan.
Thanks very much, Kevin, Alina. It's a pleasure to be here. You guys are two of our most, you know, Kristen and I are two of our favorite people in payments. Always watching what you guys are doing. Love the content. Love being a subscriber to the podcast. I think it's insightful. It's great what you guys are doing. So pleasure to be here.
Well, with that, Ryan, give us a little bit about your background. You know, I kind of gave everybody a little hint. You and Kristen are kind of like the Canadian mirror to us. I think there's very few couples out there that work as closely together as we do, Elena and I, and you and Kristen. And I know that requires, how do I say this correctly? That requires a lot of patience.
Yeah.
But with that, tell us about Sona. Who is Ryan O'Leary? You know, who is Sona? What do you guys do? Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, giving a little bit of background on me personally, like, so, you know, born and raised in beautiful Nova Scotia, Canada. And you know, so my, like, a little bit of my background, you know, I graduated and got out of university and, you know, I wasn't much of a risk taker, but the first job that I actually took was I started working in it, like, in an electronics sales business. So similar to, like, Circuit City, or, and it was called Future Shop. It's actually was purchased by Best Buy. And my job was like actually selling computer systems, right? So in the mid-90s, right? So and so as a salesperson on the floor, you can think, you know, during that time, you know, you had parents coming in, you know, because their school said, hey, you need to buy a computer to have it at home. They had never used one before. One of the things I had to learn really quickly was, how do you kind of relate technology in a way so that, you know, somebody that doesn't have any background or experience in a benefit way so that they ultimately would buy? Because you'd be talking to these parents and they'd be like the internet, what's the internet? And never been on it. So I did that for like 8 years and worked my way up through a management structure, got promoted, ended up having my own store. So at a really young age in my 20s, I had like a bunch of people working for me and eventually kind of got to the point where I was like, wait, this is like a lot. And I wanted to kind of go back to that sales side. So I actually left that industry and that's how I actually entered payments. So I entered payments in 2003, applied for a regional sales job, working for First Data, covering all of Atlantic Canada and supporting the branches. And so that was in 2003. And so when they came in and said, hey, listen, what we need you to do is take care of these referrals and set up this merchant processing, set up customers. I was like, wow, you mean at that time, I just need to go in, talk to a customer, get a statement, do an analysis, and basically try to flip them over? Like, there's no technology, like there's nothing. I was like, this is easy. You know, so that's really kind of the background of where technology came. And then I started doing that. So I did that for 5 years with First Data, had a lot of success, obviously, because I found that sales cycle really easy to use. And then, of course, so JP Morgan Chase or Chase Payment Tech at the time came knocking on the door and said, hey, this Ryan guy has some good results. We should try to see if we can get him to come over. I went over to them and then I worked for them for another 8 years. So 5 years working in a similar capacity, like sales capacity supporting branches, and then 3 years of doing kind of mid-market and national sales with those guys. So so that's kind of like the previous background, you know, and we're now like 21 years into this payments business, but that's really kind of how it started. And so I You know, I live in Nova Scotia with my wife, Kristen, who runs all the operations side of Sona. And then, you know, I'm kind of the more probably the sales and the visionary side. And so, you know, we have four kids, two boys, two girls. Our oldest boy actually works in the business as well with us in sales. And we have one dog. His name's Clover, 5-year-old boxer.
Imagine Perfect. That. His name is Clover. Two things we need to note from that. A, Ryan made it a lot longer at First Data than I did. Yes. And B, he has somehow successfully convinced one of his children to come into the business, which Elena and I have been extremely unsuccessful at doing.
Yes.
I love how your background, though, I always think that there's no experience that's wasted, you know, no matter what we're doing. And I know that technology is a big part of what you're doing now. And so to have that early sales experience in technology, now you've really like applied that in a new way in the role that you have now. I think I'd like to cover, Ryan, a little bit about how we met, because I think everybody knows I spend so much time on LinkedIn, and it can feel a little random to, you know, reach out to people and connect in this way and start conversations with people you've never met before. But that's the way you and I met a couple of years ago. And we had this instant connection, most likely because, you know, we're really based on the same values, and also because of this working with our spouses and running a company together is such a unique experience. But I'd love to just hear your insight on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we came probably like most of your connections, you know, I start seeing some of your posts and what you're talking about. And, you know, and I think they're like, from our my perspective, there was undoubtedly kind of a draw to your content of saying around values, right? Because, you know, people naturally kind of develop friendships and, you know, based on having that kind of shared values about kind of what's right and wrong. And I found it almost somewhat refreshing, a lot of that content, because you initially, you know, this is a couple of years ago, you know, looking at some of, some of your commentary about how the industry working, how it works today and what would change. It really came like as a, like somebody that was felt like an outsider coming in and saying, like scratching their head and going, why is it like this? It doesn't seem to make sense. Right. And yeah. And I think that's initially how, and we just kind of started connecting, and I started kind of commenting, and I think, like, you know, I may be wrong, but it feels like, you know, within that kind of LinkedIn type of community, there are names of others and other people that kind of are coming together to have those types of conversations. And you kind of sparked that, right? So, and now having a podcast and kind of getting that going, I think it's great. You know, I believe like there's the shared values, but there's also the other side for me is that I really like the way that you guys are looking in kind of operations first, right? Because traditionally, when we talk about sales and operations, you know, a lot of times it's kind of looked as like polar opposites, or there's a tug of war going back and forth between both sides. Whereas, you know, I think the secret is to try to find that place in the middle where it's really cohesive and it's working together. And that's where the efficiency starts to happen, right? That's where the great stuff starts to happen. So
I can't tell if Ryan is really talking about the business or the marriage.
It's both.
Yeah. It's really hard. Sales is it's easy to make that exciting and glamorous and glitzy. I mean, that's the immediate hit. And it's so hard, I feel like, to make operations the same way, even though it can pack an even bigger punch when you really get it right. That really is the engine behind the sales machine. You know, that's what's driving it. When you get those two things right, and I'm not going to stop preaching from the rooftops about how we need to focus on operations, because, and I think it happens naturally in our industry because so many agents start with sales only, and then they kind of graduate to agent to ISO, and then they try to lead their ISO with running just on sales and don't bring that operations into it. And I'll admit, Kevin is the operational mastermind, and I've learned everything that I have from him. I shouldn't tell him that, his head will get 3 times bigger, but he's the operations guy. So it's been fun to learn from him. And I get it now. I've seen the difference it makes when you focus on operations and how that can help fuel your sales and then also make those sales stickier.
Yeah. And I think like there should be some creative, there should be some tension, like creative tension, right? Like, I know a couple of years ago we were talking about, you know, potentially, hey, how could we work together? Right. And I was thinking, you know, if I was like picturing myself, you know, me and Kevin, like in a boardroom, and I'm saying, hey, listen, we're going to do this and it's going to be like this. And him coming and saying, you know, listen, this and this and this and this have to be done. Have you thought about that? And I'm like, no, those are just the details. We can figure those out later. Right. Like there is like, that's kind of what happens with Kristen and I in Sona today. My 82-year-old stepfather, you know, it was a big influence, and it was a mechanical engineer by trade and launched commuter assisted drafting and manufacturing and that software first into like Atlantic Canada. He still is looking at our business, you know, like on a regular basis, that type of mindset. Right. So I'm very fortunate, you know, to have people like them that are really ground me, because I could see myself falling into a situation where, you know, overselling and overdoing this and not really thinking of the details and then having that implode at some point down the road.
I just keep thinking back to that first dinner that we had together, and you and I are talking, and you said something about partnerships and said, hey, what do you think about partnerships? And I was like, I hate them. They suck. I hate partnerships. And just your face was like, what?
Yes. Well,
you know, most of our listeners are based in the U.S. and most of them are, you know, U.S. based ISOs. And quite honestly, I knew of Canada and I kind of knew about Canada. I knew that, you know, old understanding of Canada, one terminal for Visa, one terminal for MasterCard, no duality, you know, one or two banks, you know, and you either work with them or you don't work with anybody. And I know that meeting you guys and getting to know you guys and understanding you guys and your business, I was so wrong about Canada in a lot of ways. Obviously, things are different in Canada. They're not the same as the U.S. Give us a little rundown on some key differences between the U.S. and Canada. And I know that you really have kind of spent a lot of time on that because you guys, you know, have looked into, do we go into the U.S., do we not go into the U.S., et cetera.
Yeah. Happy to. So to your point, you know, going back to 2003, it was that way. I mean, when I first started with First Data, they needed to use, they were using First Data that had the bin for Visa. They had to use, you know, another division called, you know, Qits to do the MasterCard, and, they didn't have duality and, you know, two separate applications. And, you know, the main things that, like, understand about, I think, about Canada is you're not seeing as much fragmentation. So, you know, we have our five major banks, and those five major banks have, you know, partnerships with generally with established acquirers, right? So, and then in those, like, you know, historically, those acquirers have had the lion's share of the market share in Canada. You know, if we look at Canada, like, in terms of size, you know, population wise, we have less than the state of California. And so these five major banks and these acquirers associated with have traditionally had lion's share of 80 to 90% of that market share. And so when I left and started Sona in 2016, this independent size started to open up. You started to see individual companies, that ISO agent type of model, starting to open up. And so the timing was good for me to leave at that time to kind of start out. So, you know, I would say, like, you know, we look at interchange, you know, you're looking at a Canadian interchange where you might have like maybe 80 to 90 different interchange rates total, right? Because you have card issuers that are only from those five. So less confusing. And then the other thing to kind of be aware is that in the Canadian space is we have like more input from some large organizations or associations that push for that transparency, right? So if you have 80 or 90 interchange rates, like they're posted publicly, there's a little bit more like focus on making sure that the sales practices that are being done align to, you know, doing it the right way. We have a Canadian code of conduct. So the Canadian government here has kind of said that, laid out points of things that you can and can't do in terms of how you sell. So, you know, I think it's a great market to be in. You know, we're starting to see some changes like surcharge coming in into Canada, compliance surcharge. You know, the biggest thing is I just don't think you see the fragmentation and the size and mass, you know, that you would see from the U.S. So
it's almost like a flip side of the U.S. In the U.S., you have an enormous amount of the businesses run through ISOs, so to speak, and the acquiring banks don't generally field the sales force. They outsource that. And in Canada, I think what we're seeing is the opposite of that. There are ISOs, but the majority of the business is direct sales into an acquiring institution. Would that be a correct assumption?
It is. And listen, like, we have some great Canadian success stories, you know, in payments. If you probably have caught Nuvei and saw the news recently with them, you know, great example, Helsum out of Calgary, you know, kind of up and coming. The other thing I would say, I think that's a little bit different in, like, say, Canada to the US, you know, we have full EMV adoption in the Canadian market. So full chip and pin, and it's gone down that road. So if we look at technology, I think, like, you know, maybe a good way to look at it is we see a lot of it coming from Europe to adoption to Canada, and then, you know, testing market to Canada to come down to the US. And
is that the old philosophy, shit rolls downhill?
Okay.
Yes. Well,
and my one other semi-serious question, in the code of conduct, which, by the way, would never work in the U.S. There's too many cowboys here. In the code of conduct in Canada, are you allowed to curse in the code of conduct?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah.
Ryan, I'd love it if you'd tell us a little bit about Sona. How did it start? What is the philosophy at Sona? Just give us a little bit of the picture and context around the company itself.
Sure. You know, it's a, you know, I think it's a funny story. I mean, it really comes back to working in the industry for 11 or 12 or 13 years or whatever, you know, it was. And saying me, my last 2 years, I think a lot happened when I was working for Chase, when the joint venture ended between JP Morgan and First Data, you know, I felt like that the organization had started to really change and become really more significantly more compliance driven. And I started also seeing like the way like payments was being distributed by them in terms of mass and quantity, and, you know, really like looking at how, like, not customers as customers, but, you know, an ability to drive more revenue and profit. So I would say, like, about a year prior, I was pretty becoming kind of disgruntled, and I was like, and it was weird because I was making great money. I was one of the top account executives in the country in sales with Chase, and you know, and I'm at home and I'm talking to Kristen, you know, my wife Kristen, and I'm like, we're on the couch and having a couple glasses of wine, and I'm like, you know, I don't, like, this is wrong, and I don't agree with this type of thought process, and, like, why is this happening? And I, that probably went on for a couple of months. And then finally, like, she just kind of said, listen, you know, you pretty much shit or get off the pot. Like, I don't need to hear this anymore. If you're going to do something, why don't you just do it? If you're not going to do something, just stop talking about it. And, like, that really came to a Friday, and on Monday, I picked up the phone and gave my resignation. And so that's how we started. I gave my resignation. You know, I was making probably over $300,000 a year. I had four kids. I had a mortgage. I had a car. I had all of those things. And, you know, I had all this. I remember that day I had an enormous amount of fear to be able to say it. But when you hung up the phone and you're like, oh, I don't have a job, like, that fear turns to, like, I have to survive, right? So, so Sona, I guess would tell you is, like, that's how Sona started. And what I was intentional about this was with Sona, when I said, okay, you've made the decision. Why do you exist? Like, why are you creating this company? What are you doing? And so the first thing I would say is I didn't start Sona because I wanted to become a millionaire, gazillionaire, or have lots of income or money, right? Like, I was already financially stable and doing quite well working for a big bank. I started it because I thought that payments could change the space, right? So if you came to our office today and you look at our wall, like and it may be cliche, but there's this big brand wall that talks about our mission, vision, and values. You know, I kind of jumped out and said, listen, I don't care about how big we become. I want to be the most respected brand in this space. And so everything intentionally that we're going to do between now and then will only be kind of aligned to those things. Like, you know, I'm a big fan of like Simon Sinek, and he talks about finite games and infinite games. Well, to be like, ultimately to work hard to be respected, it's not something that you can win. Like, it's not something that you can generally, it's a game that you just keep playing. So that's how like Sona started. And I think just like, it's cool. Like when you have something like, you know, as a company, and I know you guys, cause it's the same thing with Secure Bank Card, you can see it. There's something really beautiful about a purpose that drives the organization beyond necessarily what the outcome and what the dollar looks like. And when we have so many players that, you know, that are listeners of yours, like lots of others that are in the space, that you can almost, see it.
You know, that's so similar to us. You know the story. I came home one day and Elena said, you can't go back to the office. You'll kill somebody. So I had to quit. And then everything that we did at Secure Bank Card and everything that we tried to pride ourselves on was, hey, if we are the best, operationally we can be, and we are one of the best in the industry operationally and efficiency wise, the rest is going to come. And it did. And it did. It's pretty amazing. And I love that you guys, you know, are very similar in that aspect as to us. I think that's really neat.
It is. And, you know, it's not always, as you guys will kind of, you know, appreciate, like, it's not always like, you know, rainbows and flower. Like, it's.
It is down here in Georgia. It's always rainbows and flower.
There you go. Exactly.
That's not what he was saying last week.
That's right. But I, you know, this is the fun of, you know, these are the fun times, you know, of kind of going through that. And then, you know, we've kind of grown obviously quite a bit since 2016. You know, we just onboarded, in the last couple of weeks, like three more people. And
I was going to say, and let's talk about that because we are a wholesale provider. We do not have a direct sales force. Everything we do is in a wholesale environment. You guys are the exact opposite of us. And I appreciate why you're that way. And I know we've talked about that many times, but tell me a little bit about that. Tell me about your sales force. Why is everything direct with you for the most part? Tell me a little bit about Sona sales force and what sets your sales force apart.
Yeah. You know, I think once again, going back to, you know, the why we exist or what we try to do is, we really want, like, we want that experience of working with a partner or an individual salesperson or an individual agent. We want to be able to make sure that there's always going to be quality over quantity, right? So how our sales team works today, is we have independent agent distribution and we have inside sales. So we have kind of both models. In the early years from, you know, 2016, after about a year just trying to get to the place where I could pay the mortgage and the bills. And as soon as we got there, you could breathe. Mm-hmm. I started to say, well, like, how do you kind of scale this out so you can get more, bring better experiences to more customers? Well, I kind of immediately said, well, I think you need to have good distribution and people need to have like skin in the game. You need to show them a path to success and wealth creation and how to do it. And I said, well, and you have to show them how to do this in your own way. So rather than going out and saying, hey, I'm going to advertise to the world and I'll try to get some experienced agents and ISOs to come in and you know, where they're looking at you saying, well, I don't need you. I'll just do it on my own. I said, well, why don't we just really be intentional about finding people that are good people, that have good values, that have drive and determination, and want to be able to have a path on their own. And so, and we'll find those people. And geez, you know, I've been in payments now for at 13 or 15 years. I think, you know, maybe I can show them how this kind of approach that may be different and teach them that way. And so we have those eight individual agents, you know, we were really, really intentional about training on technology and product first. You know, we built our own learning platform called Sona School, which, you know, kind of teaches payment distribution in our own way. Now what's happened is, you know, we've had some of those agents. We don't want 100 of them or 200, you know, at one point we had 10 and it's a little bit less now. And we have more on the internal side that kind of handles more of our referral relationships and bank relationships. You know, it goes back to kind of that vision is if I would rather have 6 to 7 that have, you know, been with me for 6 years on and really know their game, they know their craft, than to have 200 of them or 50 of them.
Yeah, I think that's what it looks like when you stay true to why did I start this in the first place? I want quality. I'm not trying to be the biggest company that ever was in Canada or wherever we are, but I started it because I wanted to do it well. And I want to grow, but with control over that growth. I don't want to just grow for the sake of growing. So I think that shines in what you've built, because now you've got something that's quality and it is still in line. Even though you've grown so much, you're still in line with the reason that you started it in the first place. We've chatted about the way you approach the sales process itself when you have an opportunity and how you lead in that sales process. I think it's a lot different than what we traditionally see. You shared an example of a bank opportunity where there were multiple branches and they have businesses that are, you know, that need merchant services. Can you kind of just walk us through some, you don't have to share all the secret sauce, but just walk us through your approach to that? Because I think it's a lot different than what people normally see in that environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think this also relates to why we're good friends, and you know why, you know, at least like from our side, we're watching always what you guys are doing. Is, I think we really like people say sales, but we really see ourselves as a service organization that just happens to be in the payments space, right? So. And if you think about like the way distribution is changing and what's happening in our space now, you know, I think like Greg Cohen said, you know, recently, you know, the CEO of Fortis, like there is a payments revolution coming. Like this is happening. And so, and where this is happening now is that it's about your ability to be able to go back to like, I go back to those Future Shop days about feature advantage benefit and explaining technology to solve problems, right? So, you know, we support like a big part of our distribution in the Canadian space is supporting partners, right? So Kristen, who runs operations, comes in and says, well, how do we make this process for partnerships to come in better than anybody else? Like how do we communicate better? How do we show better? How do we show value in that space? So that influence, that operational influence has been strong. So when we go to like financial institutions or credit unions, we say, hey, how does that distribution look like right now working with the biggest acquirers on the planet? You know, like how does that look? Is it something that your branches and your people feel confident that they want to promote that service based on how it is now? And then coming into us and saying, how do we make this better? How do we make it so that if somebody comes in and opens a business account, that frontline person understands the current technology that's available in the marketplace, that knows the right questions to be able to, you know, create interest to bring, you know, that to come in. And when it comes into us, you know, like having the ability to, we follow a process called like a 3-touch process. So all of our salespeople that are internal, they hit that, they talk to that partner 3 times. They within 24 hours of the referral, they're acknowledging it. They're acknowledging it again as soon as they've spoken to the end user or client. And they're always talking to them a third time, whether they close or win the business, right? Like, these are operational processes that we put in place that you know, translate to sales, right? So, like that, I think that's like really our main approach. Now, when it comes to how we distribute today, we are really much more focused on looking at a piece of technology, ripping it to pieces, and then thinking about how would you talk about that in such a way to make someone's life easier? What does that do to fix a problem? Because we're seeing this now, this ISV drive where, you know, we have a well-known cloud-based point of sale, you know, company that goes into payments and says, you're switching, like you have to switch. You know, the days of going back to them and saying, hey, but you're going to pay 60 basis points more. The user is saying, okay, well, my time is worth this. And that's, I think that's what I need to do. So that's our focus. Our focus, like when we even promote solutions rather than a gateway or a terminal and, you know, talking about, you know, the features of it that can't relate to anybody to be able to why they would buy it. We start with the question in mind first of the problem that's going to solve. And then we focus really heavily on that and solving that problem, which, you know, ultimately leads to higher margin, higher usability, less attrition, all good things.
I agree with what you're saying. And I know that Sona's big mindset is around providing great customer service, just as you're talking about, you know, feature, benefit, you know, and then providing that customer service. How do you think about starting with the experience and then payments almost as an afterthought? I know you and I have had many conversations about that. I'm kind of leading you into it a little bit here, I think. But, you know, I know that's one of your big leads is you really don't talk about payments. It's more about the relationship.
Yeah, I would say, and I think I relate to Secure Bank Card. Like, you know, we've talked about this together and, you know, this is some of the similarities. You guys are very intentional about, you know, providing services and technology to enable a sales engine to do exactly what they need to do best. And that's, you know, going out and earning those customers and bringing them in. So I would say to you, like from a service perspective, you know, once again, if you go back to the wall and you look at the mission, vision, and values, and you say, hey, we want to be the most respected brand in payments. Well, to be the most respected and to, you know, you need to be looking at your attrition. Like you have to be like laser focused on it. You know, if you have a customer that's upset, you know, you're pulling your sales team, you're pulling your team together and you're talking about it. You know, we feel like, you know, if we focus on reputation first, and you know, part of it is just, you know, like the values, right? Mm-hmm. But the other is about, you know, putting those types of systems around where everybody is talking about it on a regular basis, right? So like attrition is our number one KPI on our board. Like if that's what we talk about, like the ads, the customer ads are just naturally a byproduct of your ability to do great things with the existing base. You know, most people don't know who Sona is. Like we have kind of crept along to get to like 4,000 merchants in Canada. Like most people, you know, we don't spend any money on targeted advertisements on Facebook and driving customers into that space. Like we don't spend any of that. We would say, listen, like, let's just invest in providing a better experience to every single client we can. And we're going to have some of that organic growth. And I think like that's, once again, coming back to you guys, why we're friends and we're in the same industry. I mean, if we were in market and our office was across the street from yours, we would still be friends because we're both trying to do the same thing. We're both trying to make the space better, right? So
I'd still be trying to pay somebody in your office to give me your list of merchants. I know we've also discussed before, you know, hey, one of your biggest sales engines is referrals. It's really, you know, And that is, we have the same thing. You know, it's amazing when you provide great service, how you generate your own sales just from the referrals from the customers that are happy to be doing business with you and are excited about the way you provide the service that you do.
Yeah. And I would say, to kind of echo that, what kind of keeps me up at night now, and Kristen, is how do you effectively do that at scale? So I have to say, like, you know, I'm getting to that point now where, you know, when I first jumped out and I was like, you know, those big acquirers, like, they're so bad, like they're brutal. And now you kind of come full circle as you start to scale out and you're saying, oh, wait, this is actually getting kind of hard here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, being intentional to keep that level of service and accountability, you know, that is like, scale ends up being the enemy of accountability, right? So, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've always enjoyed our conversations is because, you know, I know that you guys are really intentional about doing that and we're trying to do the same thing. So,
mindful growth. Yeah, it's really, and I think you're the one that told me about that book, Small Giants, Companies That Choose to Be Great Instead of Big. And that's the concept, is you start with your values and you grow, and you're not, you know, we're not, hey, we don't need to IPO. We don't need to go out and fundraise because we want to just grow. We want to continue to be better, and we want to grow and still maintain those values that we started with in the beginning. So it's just, I love how you're painting the picture for us, how that bleeds through in all the ways at Sona. It's your customers, it's your operational team, it's the operational processes themselves. You're bringing this mindfulness of your values into every single thing that you do. And then you don't have an attrition problem. And you're mindful about keeping track of it, because that's the story that's telling you, are we staying true to our values or are we not staying true to our values? That's your best indicator, probably, of are people sticking around? Are we doing what we said we were going to do? And that's the most simple question that we can ask ourselves and know whether we're doing well or not.
Yeah, that book, Small Giants by Bo Burlingham. And I have to say, like, reading for me, you talk about imposter syndrome sometimes. Like, I, you know, I'd be the first one to say I have that regularly. You know, I'm like, I was just a sales guy, right? Like, you know, a salesperson working for a big company that said, I'm going to jump out. You know, the lift to, you know, become a better CEO or a better leader, a lot of it is, you know, a lot of that reading and pushing myself is because, like, I feel like I always have to be pushing my game higher because this is not native to me. And, you know, we know that there are, you know, kind of, you know, organizational large CEOs, like, you know, functioning CEOs that, you know, have a different type of leadership style or a different way that they have to lead for organizations that are that large. And then you have, you know, smaller, scrappier, you know, founders and CEOs that are trying to figure it out. You know, that book, Small Giants, by Bo Burlingham, as I said, I've read a lot of them, but that was one that kind of really resonated. And so after reading that, we actually took some of our junior leaders, right? So my son, you know, who's in his mid-20s, and his friend that was working in the business, and they put on they created a leadership academy, so kind of a group, and we put, you know, we invested in that, sent them down. They were in Detroit and Dallas. They had to do it for, like, you know, 12 months. But the, you know, kind of the learning associated was kind of changing that mindset. And I would say there are amazing payments companies that do the right thing, where they're very vocal about saying growth is everything, right? Like, we want to grow. And I have nothing against anybody that thinks that way. I think it's great. It's just not our why, right? Like, our why is, like, we think that growth will be just a fundamental metric that occurs based on your ability to do these things.
Yeah, I think it's just the way you look at growth. Are you chasing growth for the sake of getting big? Or are the things that you're doing leading to growth instead? And I think yours is the latter, obviously, that you're doing all the right things that are naturally leading to growth.
Yeah. And as I was saying, like, from the reading and talking to you guys, I mean, I'm an avid listener and reader of like watching others to learn from them. You know, we have a like a book club here in our office. Like, so if you come here, you'll see a whole bunch of books, and we're kind of encouraging, you know, our smaller team of like 12 people, you know, check one out. Or, you know, when you start here, like the very first book that every new hire has to read is a book called Raving Fans, right? So it's a short read, but we make every single person read it. And then we, after a week later, we talk to them about it. So
yeah. Here we make everyone read Who Moved My Cheese?
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
You know, but I'm like you, it's, hey, look, if we are not every day looking at how did we perform yesterday, how did we do something yesterday, and is there a way we can do that better today? I'm such a huge fan of change. I'm such a huge fan of embracing new ideas. And no, not all ideas are good. That's okay. You have to. And especially when you're a smaller organization like us, like Sona, you have to find these things that make you more effective, more efficient. And you are constantly having to look at, just because we did it this way yesterday does not mean it's the best way to do it. How can we do it better today? So many people are afraid of change. And if you are not opening and embracing of change, you are, the death march has already started for you. You have to constantly change. You have to constantly get better.
Even looking at, with the two of you over, like, say, the last year, or, you know, like maybe it was 2 years ago that we came down and got together in Atlanta, and we were talking about, you were pretty set in saying, hey, we're an operationally efficient wholesale ISO, and that's our place that we are going to shine and be the best in the world at. And in you were talking and saying, sales engine, you guys are in sales. Like, that's not what we do. I remember you saying, hey, now, but you know what? If you look at what you're doing now, look at how you guys are getting out of your comfort zone, you know, by doing, you know, putting a podcast on, or, you know, getting out the attraction to sales in Elena. Like, you, we see it with, like, you know, talking to these companies, bringing it in. You're intentionally getting out of your comfort zone. And what's happening? You know, what's the result? You're scaling and you're seeing results from it. So
I'm getting gray hair and I'm getting old.
Well, we started with, you know, Kevin brought a lot of relationships into this. In the beginning, his mindset was, I'm only doing business with people that I've done business with before, or I know, or one of those people can vouch for somebody that I don't know. And now we're into this whole new world of, you know, doing business beyond that. And we've grown a lot, not just the growth itself, but I think we've become more well-rounded as a result for trying to serve people outside of the kinds of partners that we were serving before. Mm-hmm. We realized, hey, we are perfectly suited for ISVs. With the operational efficiency leans right into that. So why are we not going after more of that? So we did start to become more intentional about, hey, we have the platform for it. Why are we not going out and getting this type of business? And then we got a few and they are raving fans, and then you go find more of those. So it has really pushed us outside the comfort zone. And I think we're all better for it. I think the change, like Kevin said, is great.
It's a great move. You know, if we think about ISVs and technology vendors, you know, this is the next frontier, right? So this is the next market segmentation. And if we start being intentional, looking at how they're being supported, you know, whether they're moving to a full run PayFac, and is a PayFac really, is that really where they want to be? Do they really understand, you know,
know what that really is?
Yeah. Do they know what it is?
And all the responsibility that comes with it. Yeah.
And who's telling them that this is the way they need to do it? And what's their driving motivation for them to be able to do that? You know, we support, like, if you look at our organization today, we do not go door to door and knock on doors for merchants to come in and switch to us. Our three segmentations for distribution are credit unions, associations, and ISVs. So those are our customers, and those are what we build our presentations on, you know, to speak to them. So you know, by you guys going into that kind of space, I think it's going to be a, it's like, there's lots of blue sky that's going to get in the space in that area.
Absolutely.
Is it going to be the super ISO that has, you know, 65,000 merchants? That, are they going to be the one that's going to be best to be able to support those technology vendors in the future, right? So,
you know, and I think in some cases it is, and but in a lot of cases it's not.
Yes.
You know, for everybody that's listening today, by the way, we are running a special on terminals because I truly believe 3 years from now, you're never going to sell another terminal. I think that the days of the terminal are going away. I may be a little too preemptive with that, but I do believe that.
Yeah, I ISV, think 3 years is a little short.
Hey, I swore checks were going away 10 years ago and they're still out there. I wrote one yesterday.
Yeah, don't you guys have like 100% pay at the table with chip and pin yet down in the US? Not yet.
What's a pin? What's a pin? We know what a chip is. We have no idea what a pin is.
My credit card and give it to somebody and then they walk away and come back? Is that
happening? Absolutely. Because how in the hell are they going to carbon copy that card if you're standing right there in front of them? They've got to take that in the back so they can skim it.
There you go.
That does blow my mind that we're so far behind with that, with the restaurant experience. And it's such a better customer experience. If we're leading with customer experience, it's so much better when it's happening right there at the table. And then all the things with chargebacks and whatnot, the protections against that with the tip amount and whatnot. It just, I don't understand why we haven't made more progress than we have, but that's a problem to be solved at a different time. But Ryan, this has been really fun today. I've learned even new things that I didn't know before, especially the dog named Clover. That's new to me. I love that. But how would you recommend if somebody wants to connect with you, how would you want them to get in touch if they want to learn more about Dona?
Sure. Listen, I'm on LinkedIn, so that's probably the best way to, best way to reach out. And we have been working with, some U.S. organizations or U.S. ISOs or agents that are like, oh, you know what? I have this thing kind of Canadian thing. Where should I go in Canada? You know, if we look at Canada and how that kind of independent distribution works, there is really only a couple options to go directly to an acquirer, you know, to kind of get set up. And similar to us, like if we look to the U.S. and said, well, why if we're coming in the U.S., we should be, you know, why wouldn't we work with Secure Bank Card? Like, why? You think I'm going to go pound on the door with First Data or Fiserv and say, hey, here I am. I'm going to plant my flag down here. And I think I'm going to be able to make it happen. Probably not going to be as effective rather than working with a partner like yourself that can support us to be able to do that. I think we're the same way in Canada. Like if we have US partners that kind of align to the same values as us, and they're saying, hey, there's some opportunity in Canada, you know, our door is open. We would love to be able to take care of them. So,
and I will say, if you are looking to place business in Canada and you need direction, or you're looking for a home that can kind of help and guide you and introduce you and train you into the Canadian market, there's nobody I recommend higher than you, Ryan. There's really not. You guys are fantastic.
I'm going to bring that bottle of Canadian whiskey next time.
That's why I do this endorsement.
You just earned it, my friend.
That's why I do the endorsement, because I get the return.
That's right. Exactly. Atlantic Canadian lobster and whiskey will be coming on our next trip to Atlanta.
That sounds divine.
There you go.
That wraps up this episode of Payments Ground Game. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others or leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.